It's Tuesday, January 10th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight, we talk about retro Atari classics, weird worlds, and Civilization 2.
Let's do this!
So, I had the interesting experience of me and my coworker upstaging high-level tech support today.
It's not hard to upstage tech support.
Well, this isn't like normal tech support. This is like privileged calling the developers or the highest level of we will debug your problem with our application, and then if need be, write a personal fix that we will send to you specifically to patch your program.
All right.
Or if you find a real problem, we'll make a service pack that addresses that.
Okay.
So I've been on and off the phone and sending emails, or as they call them in IBM, notes, because they use Lotus Notes, to this guy for a number of weeks. And I'm not getting anywhere with him. He just keeps asking for information, and I keep eliminating all the things that he's trying to say that are the problem when it's obvious to me that they're not the problem. And finally, I get sick of it, so me and my coworker do some investigating on our own. And we found the problem and solved it.
Great.
So I called him back, and I was like, all right, tell you what, here's what the problem is, blah, blah, blah.
So, wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this was like the highest level. Imagine if you called Microsoft, and eventually they pushed you through to Bill Gates, and he was just like, I don't know.
Well, he doesn't know. I don't expect him to.
Yeah, but say you had a problem with like a part of Windows, and you had like the platinum, gold, ultra, whatever service plan. And you got to the developer who actually wrote the specific code you're having a problem with. And he was just like, I don't know.
Wow.
And then you solved his problem for him.
See, the thing about Microsoft is that they have like a different person writing different pieces. And you can never figure out who wrote which piece. And I remember reading stories on the internet about some guy who had like a problem with some weird thing. And he went running around Microsoft looking for people. And there was undocumented APIs. And, it's just craziness when you get with giant applications.
But I mean, it was real, because usually when I have a problem like this with like real software and I really need, assistance, eventually I'll get through to someone who knows the answer and fixes it for me. It was really kind of a shock to realize that I had hit the end of the line.
Well, maybe it was just like someone got replaced. And that wasn't actually the guy who wrote it. It was just a replacement.
Well, this probably wasn't the developer who did that part. He's just a support guy for it. But suffice to say, there are a lot of people who are having issues with this software.
Mm.
It's not just me. And you can usually get more help, it seems, by asking other people like me who had trouble and just fix it on their own than you'll get by calling the people who make the stupid thing.
Open source wins again.
Yeah, open source wins.
Awesome. So, Apple has this magic power of dominating the news with basically no effort whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I share my office with this cool Korean guy, and normally he's real quiet, and I'm real quiet, and I do my thing, and he does his thing. But today was the day when Mac stuff was coming out. So all day, he's like, he'd turn to me and he'd be like, because he had a little like text feed, it looked like a little RSS thing that just kept updating whenever like anything was said at this Mac thing. And he'd turn to me and he'd be like, oh, blah, 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 Intel, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, I just saw, because I was watching something similar at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, I went, because I wanted to see how much something was going to cost. And I went to the Apple store and I saw that note. They're like, the Apple store is down.
That note always comes up whenever Steve Jobs is on stage.
And I was like, crap. And I turned to look. And I see that he has just hit the exact same thing, and he turns to me, and I'm like, ah.
Yeah, everyone's like, oop, the store's down, that means new products. You know, that's how they can, because sometimes people would be like, is he even going to announce anything? Is anything going to happen? They didn't even know if keynotes were going to happen. It was so secret. And they'd be like, oh, the store went down, something's going to happen. Or, oh, the store hasn't gone down, nothing's going on, go home.
Yep, but there was some pretty big news.
All right, the biggest news today is the MacBook Pro.
Apple MacBook Pro.
Well, they're not calling it the PowerBook anymore because
it's not based on
PowerPC, but it's still basically a PowerBook. So it's got an Intel Core Duo processor instead of a G5, and it's wicked fast.
Yeah, and a pile of RAM and all the goodies you'd expect.
Basically, you can either spend $2,000 to get like a half gig of RAM and 80 gig hard drive and, you know, a pretty substantial perfect laptop, or you can spend $2,500 and get the god raper laptop.
I mean, honestly, I mean, I'm kind of in the market to buy a new computer, but I don't really want to spend money. If I had a couple grand lying around, one of these would have been pre-ordered already, and then I would be checking the post office every day to see if it had been shipped.
Yeah, it's pretty badass, and I feel sorry for anyone who just bought a PowerBook.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing that pissed me off is it only comes in, I think, a 15-inch widescreen.
Yeah, you wanted a little 12-inchy deal.
If there was a 12-inch one of these for $1,500, I'd have it already. I would have clicked order. Doop, it would showed up.
I mean, this thing's got gigabit Ethernet built in, a backlit keyboard, you know, all the cool little fancy Apple
ooh,
things.
Ooh, backlit keyboard.
It's got an Apple remote.
Oh, yeah, the remote's a big thing now.
It's got a fast Radeon, like a really fast Radeon, DVI out, giant-ass hard drive, DVD burner.
Wow.
Yeah, burner. Dual-layer DVD burner in a laptop.
Well, laptops have those nowadays. You're a little behind the times.
Yeah, I'm a little behind the times, but it's just awesome, and it's so thin.
Yep, it's basically a badass PowerBook plus everything. And since it has the x86 processor, it's been confirmed you can do crazy Linux and Windows on it. Can't beat that.
Yeah.
And dual booting on a laptop is way more convenient than on a desktop because you turn it on and off all the time. You know, you turn it off, put it in the bag, take it out, turn it on. And usually when you turn it on, you're carrying it around somewhere and you're going to use it for a specific thing when you turn it on. So dual booting is really just, there's no inconvenience to it whatsoever.
Yep, and honestly, it's fast enough to where if I got a thing like this, it could be my primary workstation.
Yeah.
It would just be my only computer. When I wanted to play Counter-Strike, I just plug a USB keyboard and mouse into it and go nuts.
Yep, that'd be it. And of course, it has the awesome screen of
now, so there's one complaint that some people had with it. It doesn't have a PCMCIA slot.
I say, what are you going to put in that slot?
Yeah, and to which I had one kind of useful answer. It was probably the only answer I could think of. If you have a token ring network, you need a slot to put a token ring card in.
I actually thought of something else. Is at work, we have these Verizon PCMCIA cards to get on the EVDU wireless network, cellular networks, you know, when you're on the train or something, you want to go on the internet, and there's no normal wireless about. But you know what? That's kind of an old busted way of doing things, and the modern way is to use your Bluetooth to connect to your cell phone. And it has the Bluetooth, so you don't really need the PCMCIA.
And it has this thing called an express card slot, which I don't know much about, but it looks like it's kind of Apple's replacement for PCMCIA for if you really need to add something.
Yeah, I don't know enough about that.
Yeah, and I was trying to follow a link right now to talk about it, but every link I clicked on is broken, so we'll have to talk about that another day.
Well, so there's the new MacBook, and now they did the iMac again. They just keep updating this iMac all over the place.
And you know what? The Intel iMac is just as badass as the Intel laptop.
Yep, it's basically the Intel laptop, only it stands up. And you can carry it around with you. But it's the same design as the existing G5 iMac, only it has the Core Duo processor and the ATI video card and all that. Oh, there's a 17 and 20-inch ones. So you get a bigger screen with the iMac.
And,
a bigger hard drive.
It doesn't cost much more than the previous iteration of iMac.
Yeah, and it costs less than the MacBook. It's $1,300 for the 17-inch. And
it's $1,700 for the badass one.
Yeah. So if you don't need to carry your computer around, but you want everything that the MacBook has, iMac.
And you know what? Honestly, these things aren't that big. You could probably just carry it around.
You can carry it around. You just can't like use it on the train. You can just bring it from house to house, though, easily.
Yep.
All right. Next thing they've got is, I don't know what to think about this. They got this iPod radio remote control. So it's a wire that goes to your iPod Nano or new iPod, and it comes out on a little wire, and at the end of the wire is a little the same control that's on a shuffle, so you can kind of control the iPod without actually taking it out of your pocket. You can just fiddle on with a little wheel on this wire.
But the main thing is that it's an FM receiver.
It's also an FM receiver, so if you look at the screen on your iPod, you can like listen to radio stations.
Now, I see no use for this for me because I don't really listen to the radio other than I listen to NPR occasionally, but I can download most of that.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have complained for a long time that the iPod didn't have FM support and that even the crappiest crap MP3 players had FM tuners.
Well, the thing is that it is true that even the crappiest of crap players from Southeast Asia have had FM tuners in them. But the thing is that I think the reason they never put it in the iPod is because it's not really necessary. And they don't want you, the other thing is they don't want you listening to stuff on the radio because that means you're not listening to the stuff you bought in the iTunes music store.
Yeah, though there's nothing to listen to on the radio anyway.
That's for sure.
I mean, I don't want to sound like a bastard, but radio is dead.
Yeah.
And if you don't think it's dead, you're wrong.
All I listen to on my iPod mostly is podcasts and things, so this is really not so useful for me. I mean, yeah. And the remote control functionality isn't worth the money.
Like, honestly, I've been listening to the radio a bit for the last month or so. That's just because the CD player in my car isn't working. That's probably the only... That is probably the single factor in the fact that I've listened to more radio in the last month than the rest of my life combined.
Well, I'm going to get a new car soon, and it'll have a working CD player, but I'm probably just going to use the iPod in the car.
Yeah, you probably want to get a car that has some sort of RCA input or a dock built into it.
I'm going to get something cool like that, for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We'll go shopping, because I need a new car stereo, too.
All right. Let's see. The next thing they came out with... Oh.
There's this little bundly thing that comes with a bunch of stuff for your Nano.
Yeah, well, no, it's an iPod AV connection kit. So it's there's an iPod dock for the normal, the video iPod, like a USB cable, a remote control, and a thing to plug. So basically what you would do is you would download videos from the iTunes music store or buy TV episodes and put them on your video iPod. Then you would put your video iPod in this dock that's connected to your TV, and you could control it with this remote control to change the video, control the video on the screen. That's all right if you're the kind of person who's buying videos on the iTunes, you know, store and putting them on your video iPod.
Thing is, this bundle is $100.
Yeah, yeah, that's about right.
Not really that exciting.
Yeah, I mean, the default iPod earbuds are kind of crummy, so they're charging $50 for some in-ear ones, which are much better, and... you get the little lanyard so you can hang the Nano around your neck and it's held on by the headphones. It's actually a pretty, you know, clever when you look at it, but it's still not much better than the earbuds that come with it. It's not really...
even that is like $50.
Yeah. So I spent, you know, like $100 on the extra quality headphones where there's, you know, no way I can damage my hearing.
Yep.
I think that was much better.
And I got to say, I'm in the market real soon to probably just get a Nano or something. I'll probably also get some nice in-ear, non-hearing-damaging headphones.
Yep. The last thing they came out with is a bunch of new software. And I don't know, I didn't read all the details of the software because it just wasn't worth my time because I'm not going to get it anytime soon. But what it comes down to is you're going to be able to podcast, photocast, and blog and all that stuff real easily and in a real slick fashion if you use a Mac. Like, you'll see a photo and you'll just drag it somewhere and you'll blog it and then you'll photocast it and it'll just make RSS feeds and put them in the iTunes stores and do everything for you.
Because I've said a lot, I'm kind of in the market for a new computer, and the fact that GarageBand is so awesome is really pushing me toward Mac in a way that I've never been pushed before.
Especially since, you know, the number one thing we need right now is a computer for podcasting action.
Yep.
And what better to do podcasting than, you know...
Well, I got it pretty down with all the free utilities and Linux, but GarageBand has a lot of nice little features.
They added even like a bunch of sound effects and like bumper musics and things to GarageBand to make it easier for you.
Of course, you don't want to use those because that means every crap podcast in the world is going to have all those in it.
Yeah, but they added a feature to where, you know, they already have some, so it's not too hard to add more, and it's easy to use them once they're in there.
Yep.
See, you see how it's like they created an area where you can put bumper musics and sound effects, and they just filled the area up a little bit for you, you know, in case, you know, there's something in there that's sort of generic that no one will notice, that you're just using the ones that are default, and then you put your own in, and that's how, you know, it's better than right now where you don't have a space for it.
Yep.
I think that's all the Apple news.
So, things of the day. Garfield isn't funny anymore.
Well, Garfield hasn't been funny since, I think, the TV show. And Garfield wasn't even funny on the TV show. It was that farm part.
Yeah. Orville Pig or whatever his name was. Orson Pig.
It was the duck that was funny.
Nah, I kind of like Sheldon, the guy in the shell.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so some guy made this awesome, awesome web program where he's basically got a whole bunch of single frames of Garfield comics in a database or something, and it randomly selects three of them and makes a new Garfield comic.
The sad thing is that three random frames from a large swatch of Garfield is usually more entertaining than actual Garfield.
Actually, it can be incredibly entertaining compared to regular Garfield. I mean, even if it comes up with something that's complete nonsense, it's still better than regular Garfield. And if you really try to get something good, you can get stuff that's hilarious. Like, we just got one that was pretty funny, and I got one earlier today that was just, like, drop dead on the floor funny. So, if you're bored and you want some funniness, you can just go play with this thing. And basically what happens is you click go, and it picks three frames. And if you like one of the frames, you can click lock.
Like video poker.
Yeah, and it won't change that frame, and you just keep randomizing until you get what you want.
I mean, I just don't get it, because actually I was out not too long ago, and I stumbled across a newspaper, which I picked up and flipped through until I found the comics. And they're terrible.
Most of them, yeah.
Yeah.
It's because when you have to appeal to such a wide swath of humanity...
But it doesn't actually appeal to that wide swath. It's just inoffensive to them.
Well, remember that there was that thing in Britain where they had to figure out the funniest joke? And it was like a joke that would make everyone in the world go, heh, heh, heh. You know? It wasn't a joke that would make anyone roll over on the floor. It's just a joke that would make everyone chuckle a little tiny bit.
Yeah, the thing is, like, Family Circus, I can't see anyone chuckling even a little.
The ones with the little line, the dotted line. I think we talked about this before.
Yeah, we did.
All right.
So,
the point is, this is cool.
You've all seen Goatsy. Goatsy is probably, if the internet had a flag, that's probably what's on it.
The
For
flag
those of, you don't know,
of internet, the United States of internet, it's just a big Goatsy on it.
At the very least, it's the flag of 4chan.
That's for sure.
But I guess I'll link to it if you've never seen Goatsy. I'll warn you that...
Well, just link to the Wikipedia. It's what people tend to do these days.
Because Goatsy is not safe for work. Goatsy is a horrible picture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've all seen it. There are now worse things out there like Lemon Party and Tub Girl. But Goatsy was the first one to catch on because it had a funny domain name. And if you actually went into the site, it had odd stuff down there. And it was just this horrible picture.
Very horrible.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people remember the first time they ever experienced it. And someone has decided to go around showing it to people who didn't know what it was and photographing their reactions.
It's great.
I think my favorite ones are, one, there's one guy who's not taken aback at all, but he's just kind of looking at it in a pondering way.
I like the one with Ron Jeremy.
Yeah, Ron Jeremy looks a lot more taken aback than I expected.
Well, because, you know, he doesn't do weird, freaky stuff. He just does he just does chicks. He doesn't do weird stuff like that. So just because he's a porn star doesn't mean he's not, you know, he likes looking at Goatsy.
Well, he seems like a cool guy because he was on, if any of you watch Penn & Teller's Bullshit, they did a bit on how all those pills that say they make your penis longer don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Ron Jeremy on the show and he was talking about, yeah, mine's big, but whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he just seemed like a cool guy.
Yeah, he's not so weird.
Nah. But I got a little amusing anecdote regarding Goatsy, because when we were sophomores in college, Scott had never seen Goatsy for more than like a nanosecond.
Well, I knew what it was, and I knew I didn't want to look at it.
But he had avoided it like the plague, and avoided it very skillfully, I might add. I tried numerous times to get him to see it and failed, and just ended up having to see it myself.
Aha!
So one day I got up before he did, and I decided that I was going to end this once and for all. So I whipped out my color inkjet. And I printed a full 8-inch by 11-inch.
There should be laws about printing Goatsy.
Well, there's another printing Goatsy story, but I'll do this one first. So I printed out a full glossy, full color Goatsy, and I taped it to his orange juice.
And I saw it as soon as I opened the fridge, and I did see it, and I did manage to quickly get rid of it. But I did see it there.
I just remember sitting at my computer, and I hear he gets up like he always does. He stumbles into the kitchen. I hear the fridge open, then I hear what the hell, Rim? Eh.
Yeah, it's about right.
Of course, we got someone else later, because the next time we moved out of the apartment and we moved back in, and RIT, the school we went to, has a giant, giant LAN. So we plugged into the LAN, and we're like resetting up our computers and everything, and we look and we see that some guy has a printer shared.
So the right thing to do is to print Goatsy out of his printer.
Yes, yes.
I mean, only a decent human being could... do something like that.
I mean, to have done otherwise would have been a crime.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
So today is gaming day.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got two new games and one really, really old game to talk about.
Yeah, well, the two new games, I'm the only one who's played them.
And I saw the first one you're going to talk about.
All right. Well,
and I have something to say about it.
What, the Atari one?
Yeah, the Atari one.
All right, well, Media Play is going out of business. So we went over there, and I was looking at the DS selection, because who can pass up 40% off a DS game, right? And the only thing that looked like it was worth spending my money on was Retro Atari. Now, usually I shy away from these games. I mean, the best ones are those Midway classics for the GameCube.
Surround Castle to stay alive.
Good job, Blue Commander.
I am Sinistar.
But anyway, this one has, let's see, I think 10 games in it, right? And a lot of these are games I like. So I figured, what could be wrong? So I'm going to talk about each game in it just real quick. Also, each game has two modes, a retro mode and a remix mode.
AKA normal and stupid.
Yeah, it's basically retro mode is what the original game looked like, maybe slightly updated so that, you know, you can see on the DS screen. The remix mode, basically they make the game look stupid so, you know, that it looks all redone. They just change the graphics. The gameplay is the same, but it looks dumb. A few of them involve these weird characters. I don't even know what the hell's going on, but anyway. Asteroids is in there. It's still as hard as the original Asteroids.
Good.
It's the same game. There's nothing really wrong with that. Breakout is in there. I love Breakout. It's a pretty good Breakout. The one thing about it, though, is that if you want, you can control it with the stylus. Basically, there's this little circle at the bottom of the screen, and you kind of grab it and drag it back and forth with the stylus.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Yeah. I played that in my web browser.
It's not a very good way to control Breakout. I mean, you have to keep the stylus, like, on this circle. If you, like, go up too high, you'll lose it, and that's not good. They should have just said, you know, put it anywhere on the bottom screen. What do you need this little knob for? I think just bad programming. Centipede's on there. I love Centipede. That's all I got to say about that. All right, Gravatar is on there. I have no clue how to play Gravatar. I can't get it to work. I just can't play this game. It's total crap. Remix or otherwise stylus, I don't know.
Wow, this is like the first time I tried to play Bubbles.
I just have no clue how to play that game. Forget about it. Lunar Lander's on there. I don't know if you played Lunar Lander. Basically, you have this little rocket, you know, the thing to land on the moon with, the thing that touches down that Neil Armstrong comes out of. And you have to control various rockets on it to keep it, floating nicely. And
now, there are numerous versions of this game all over.
Yeah, and
one we're referring to is the real one.
Yeah, this is where you basically have this thing, and they throw it into basically this, pixelated terrain. And you have to make it land nicely on a flat surface. And there's a few flat surfaces, usually. It's really hard. And in certain versions of Lunar Lander, I think the Atari one and the arcade one, I can do it. I can land the lander pretty well. On this one, I haven't gotten it to land yet, and I gave up trying. All right, perhaps the best thing in this whole collection is Missile Command. Now, I like Missile Command, and a lot of other people like Missile Command. That's the one where the missiles come from the sky, and you defend the cities by shooting explosives at the missiles.
I still have the original Missile Command cartridge for the Atari 2600.
Oh, the Atari version was terrible.
It was fine.
No, the arcade's where it's at, because you get the little tiny buttons, one for each missile shooter.
But
anyway. This is perhaps the best Missile Command ever, because you play with the stylus. So you just touch the screen, and that's where you shoot. It's great. I don't know why no one ever thought of that before, but is perhaps the best Missile Command implementation in existence. So if you like Missile Command, you have to get this. Especially if it's real cheap. I mean, it was $20 and then 40% off. Cheap, cheap, cheap. Pong is in there.
This is a travesty.
It's pretty much a travesty. I mean, it's pretty much Pong. I mean, except you're not going left to right, you're going up to down. Well, you're on the down and they're on the up. And it uses the dual screens of the DS. So it's not quite the same proportion as the original Pong. But if you want to play multiplayer, you need another cartridge. Now,
I point out that Mario Kart does not require another cartridge to play.
But they can't.
Mario frickin' Kart.
But they couldn't get Pong to play on one cartridge.
See, it's obvious to me that they either didn't look at the dev kit they got and just didn't know, or more likely, they wanted to sell twice as many cartridges.
No, I don't think it's either one of those. what this looks like to me is someone just got a DS dev kit, and to, you know, to practice DS coding, they just implemented a bunch of Atari games for it. And then they said, hey, if we add like a few hundred more dollars of development, you know, to this, then we'll be able to sell it as something cheap and make money off of it. So they did. And they didn't actually care about making it good. They just cared about making it good enough to sell. You know, this is like the lowest, crappiest thing that Nintendo will allow you to sell for one of their systems. Let's see. The other game, Sprint, that's that racing game. It's just hard and not fun. Tempest. Oh, Tempest pisses me off on this because I like Tempest. That's the one where you go around the edge of the circle and you shoot into the middle to shoot the other spaceships.
Oh, yeah.
You can only control this one with the stylus, really. Like, there's no way to control it with the arrows.
Okay.
So it's pretty much impossible to play. Like, well, it just sucks. Oh, the last one. The last one is good. It's Warlords.
Warlords, if you've never played it, is a absolutely fan-fucking-tastic, like, four-player, one-versus-one-versus-one-versus-one free-for-all awesome game.
Yeah, you can play it with the... you can use the stylus, but you don't have to. You can use the arrows, and it's better with the arrows. Think of it like versus Breakout with four people. So there's each person has a corner, and each person has a little knobbly that goes around the edges of their square corner, and it's a big plus, and there's a little bouncy fireball bounces around in the plus area, and you try to block it from hitting the blocks in your corner and try to hit the other people's blocks.
I used to play it four player on the Atari back in the day. Still have it. It's awesome.
It's really awesome, and it's for the DS, but the multiplayer, again, you need another cartridge. It sucks. I don't even know if you can actually play Warlords multiplayer. Pretty much, they put multiplayer on here, but it's pretty much worthless, because no one ever is going to have more than one cartridge of this in any one place.
Great.
All right.
So we got two more games to talk about.
Yep. The other game that I got just recently, actually, Tycho recommended it, and it was a PC game, so anyone who's going to start talking about how, oh, Scott said there were no good PC games, well, this PC game will run probably on like a 486, so you can stop talking about that now.
Yeah, it won't run in Wine, though, so I can't play it.
It almost runs in Wine. So
yeah,
close.
Yeah, almost in Wine doesn't count for shit.
Yeah. I mean, it shows up, and it's working perfectly, but you can't actually move the mouse in the window because there's some sort of weird bug. But anyway, it's called Weird Worlds, and it looks a lot like Master of Orion, if you've ever played Master of Orion. But it's not a giant epic space development game. It's a... sort of an exploring, high score getting type of game. You can your choices are basically you can play the science game, the pirate game, or the commander game. And the science game, what you want to do is you want to fly around the galaxy collecting like artifacts and scientific things, and you want to explore black holes and that sort of thing. The pirate game, you want to go around collecting big money items and then bring them back. And the commander game, you want to basically explore and discover alien races and blow people up with your missiles. And it's really fun. Like, you know, you go around and there's a lot of item management, but it's not difficult item management like an RPG. It's like, oh, look, I found a better gun. Oh, look, I found a thing that lets me move around the galaxy faster. You know, and you only have so many years of game time, you know, before you're done and you have to go back and retire. So it's like, how much more can I do in this time? Will that make my score go up? Will it make my score go down? What ship should I put this item in? They want an item. What should I give them? Where should I go next? You know, should I engage this combat? Should I run away? It gets really fun. Thing is, when I got bored of it for a while, but then I rediscovered like the hidden secretness of the game. Like there's items that do crazy stuff, but you don't realize. And it changes, like, the whole game. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't have much to say about it since I haven't really played it.
Yeah. Basically, there's a free demo, which you can all play. And the demo actually kept me occupied for a while. But then I actually paid $25 and got the full version. And I'm not sad. And even if I do eventually get bored of it, I can mod it. It comes a little mod kit. And modding a space exploration game, that's going to be way cool. I'm going to come up with something great. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
So, since I haven't played any new games, I've actually been playing an old game quite a bit lately. Remember Civilization 2?
How could you not?
It's probably one of my favorite games ever. It's right up there with the old Quest for Glory games and, you know, TIE Fighter. So, Civilization 2, in case any of you were, you know, living under rocks or just never heard of a video game before, Sid Meier's made this game called Civilization.
Wait, before that, he made Colonization.
Yes. And basically, the Civ games, now, well, the Civilization games, because there was a game called Civ, which had nothing to do with Sid Meier's.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's just this crap game. Don't get me started.
Okay.
These games are basically, they start you out at, like, prehistoric caveman times, and you build a tiny little village, and you control the destiny of this civilization up until, like, beyond our modern days.
Yep.
It's a large, epic civilization-building game that has pretty much infinite possibilities. The replay value is infinite.
That's the number one thing I like about Civilization is it, you know, there's so many ways to win, which is, I've heard interviews with Sid Meier where he talks about it, and I was pretty much just nodding my head the whole time. It's like, you can win by building a spaceship. You can win by conquering the world. You can win in the newer civilizations with culture. You can win by, you know, doing all sorts of different, you know, things. And it's way cool because no one strategy is, like, the best strategy for winning. It's pretty much if you play well enough and you know what you're doing, you'll win no matter what. But you get to choose which way you're going to win, so you can make it more fun each time you play.
And also just the way the game works, because usually you play on a randomized map, or you can even play on, like, real maps, like a map of the actual Earth, and then you play on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that even though it's just AIs you're playing against, personalities develop and the game always progresses. Like, I've always seemed to end up where I'll be playing, and through no fault of my own, the game will just end up where there's me as a superpower, and then there's other superpower, and there's a big Cold War, and all these little states, like, bickering underneath us.
Yeah, it's just cool how that turns out. I think it's partially because of the program personalities of the different nations.
Yep. It's always the freaking Zulus.
Yeah, Zulus are pretty dangerous. Gandhi is usually dangerous.
Yeah, for some reason, Gandhi's really a warmonger. He'll just steal your stuff, plunder your villages, kill your women.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, he was such a nice guy, but in Civilization, he's a bastard.
Actually, I'm a big fan of the Carthaginians.
I always play as either Babylon or Persia.
Ah, Persia.
You know, you gotta play the civilizations that no longer exist, so that way when you get stealth bombers, you can be like, ha-ha, this shouldn't be.
I mean, I've had so many good times in that game. I used to play when I was in, like, high school. Literally, I'd stay up at night, like, on the phone with people until 3 or 4 in the morning, just playing Civ 2 and independently of that, like, chatting with people on ICQ or on the phone.
I would just stay up all night playing Civ 2 until I built the entire spaceship with as many parts as I possibly could and then taking it off.
Yep. Or I just colonize a world as far flung as I could. Cities everywhere.
I never did that, but sometimes I would do, like, these slow, methodical wars, and I would fill my entire island with fanatics just to make sure no one could get me.
My favorite was the nukes. I'd always build, like, missile silos, or I'd use a bug in the game where you could fortify. You could basically put an air unit somewhere and just leave it there, and it would never run out of fuel or disappear. So I had a Cold War. I actually set up nuclear missiles, and I just set them all up off the coast of Asia, waiting for Russia to, you know, give me any shit.
Nukes are always sort of this, if you actually use them in the game, like, for strategy, they were kind of like stabbing yourself, and then the other guy gets stabbed too.
Yep. The game actually, it handled nuclear diplomacy and just the whole nuclear weapons thing very realistically.
Semi-realistically.
Well, as realistically as a simple game like that can, in terms of how people react to it. Because basically, you can develop the Manhattan Project, which gives you nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
But then, it doesn't just give them to you, it gives them to everyone. So there's always this point at which anyone who has enough science could research it, but no one wants to, because then everyone else is going to get it too. But then eventually some bastard decides he wants it, and he does it, and then everyone arms, but there's always some nation that doesn't have, like, missile technology, so they can't really use it, and it gets crazy.
Well, it doesn't actually give you the nukes immediately. It's like it unlocks the ability to research nukes for everybody. So it's like if you get Manhattan Project, then you can research nukes right away, but other people might take longer, and they'll be like, don't threaten me with your nukes, Or, you're lucky you have those nukes. I'll do whatever you say until we have them.
Yeah, nukes work a lot like the Great Wall of China works early in the game.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same effect as far as the foreign policy is concerned in the game.
Plus, there's so many funny little things in the game. Like, you have to pick a government. You can have revolution. Sometimes your people will revolt on their own and change the government for you. But if you pick democracy, every time you start a war, your Senate will always just yell at you and then vote you down and stop the war. Like, you'll have troops outside of the enemy city's capital, and you're laying siege to it, and you're all set to plunder, and suddenly the Senate's like, all right, you can't have a war anymore, and they take all your troops away.
Well, sometimes it'll be the opposite. Like, someone will declare war on you, and normally you wouldn't want to declare war, or you might want to make peace, and the Senate will be like, no, we got to kill those guys.
Of course, usually what I do when that happens is I overthrow my own government and install some sort of fundamentalist nutbag dictator.
Yeah, I usually play the game where I go monarchy, and then I go for a public democracy to get all the science. And then if I need to build stuff, I'll use communism. But then as soon as I get the end and there's no more science left and I've built enough stuff, fundamentalism.
The game has a nice funny jab at just that one of the governments is fundamentalism. And fundamentalism, your people are always happy no matter what. And they give you tons of money in the form of tithes.
Mm-hmm.
But your science rate, the rate at which you develop science, is cut in half.
Yep.
Huh.
Basically, once you reach the end of the game, you don't need more science. So it's fine to be fundamentalist. You don't get that penalty. And then you get this new unit you can produce, the Fanatic.
Fanatics are great. They cost nothing to maintain. They're cheap to build. And basically, they just stand there and make a mess.
Yeah, you can just... Basically, what I do is I'll build, like, a bunch of stealth bombers and cruise missiles. And if anyone makes trouble, I send all the cruise missiles and stealth bombers over there to destroy all of their military units. And then the Fanatics invade the city and take it over. And there's not much you can do about it, especially if the Fanatics come by train. They're just unstoppable.
I mean, basically, we could go on and on about this game for hours. But suffice to say, if you've never played a Civilization game, I highly recommend you download Civ 2 because it's abandonware. You can just pick it up.
Well, actually, that's technically an illegal link, but the guy still has it up and no one's bothered him, so...
Yes, you know what? It's abandonware enough for me.
Yeah.
This is a fantastic game, though I'll warn you...
It's not like it matters because you could buy it for $5 in the store.
Yep. And Civ 3, played a bit, it's good. And Civ 4, which has just come out, is supposedly, like, awesome.
Yeah, we'll have to see about that. We don't know yet.
Yeah, because once again, I can't run it in Linux.
Yeah, but, you know... Get any of the Civilization games. I mean, even Civilization 1 is good.
Yeah.
Not as good as 2. 2 is like, you know...
Like, people considered 2 to be, like, the ultimate Civilization game.
Yeah.
And 3 was good, but a lot of people had complaints about it. And they say that 4 takes all the good from 3 and all the good from 2 and mashes them together.
And they say that 4 actually has multiplayer that makes sense, even though I don't know the specifics of that. Because the multiplayer in 2 and 3 really doesn't work out so well.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for the opening music.
Thanks for listening. Please remember to point your favorite podcatcher at feeds.feedburner.com/geeknights to get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Also, please visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com for the latest updates and forum discussion. And whether you love or hate our podcast, we won't know unless you send your feedback to us at geeknights@gmail.com.